this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. An eccentric wealthy man back in the early 20th century had an obsession with the idea that William Shakespeare didn't write all those plays. So he hired a woman and tasked her with decoding these famed scripts to prove his idea. That strange relationship and project ultimately led Elizabeth Friedman to be in a position later to put gangsters in prison and to break down a Nazi spy ring in World War II. Part of Friedman's story involves her education at Worcester College here in Ohio, and her life story is the center of the latest installment of PBS anthology series American Experience. It's titled The Codebreaker. Let's hear the trailer.
She was a suburban mom, but she lived a double life.
She had the ability to see beyond what most other people could.
She was a code-breaking Quaker poet who hunted Nazi spies. And with the invention of radio, the world's secrets are flying through the ether.
The United States had no code-breaking agency. There was no NSA. There was no CIA.
She figured out methods of solving secret messages that had never been imagined before.
She's being asked to break codes for the United States military in a world war. This is as deep as on-the-job training gets.
She begins the development of strategic intelligence. She was really visionary.
The Germans have no idea that the spy ring was broken up because their codes have been broken.
One of the headlines in a story that she appeared in was Solved by Woman.
They don't talk about her ability to break these codes. They talk about how she's this dainty little woman.
Elizabeth's story remained untold for so long, mainly because of sexism and secrecy.
And if we could miss something as big as Elizabeth, who else are we missing?
And The Codebreaker premieres this evening on our local PBS stations, WCET Channel 48 in Cincinnati and WCVN Channel 54 in Northern Kentucky. Joining us now to talk about it is the writer, director, and producer of American Experience, The Codebreaker, Shauna Kazit. Shauna, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, I really enjoyed the preview of this film that I got to see. A fascinating story of Elizabeth Friedman that I was completely unfamiliar with. This code-breaking Quaker poet, as we heard her described in that promotional piece there and in the documentary itself. And another piece that we just heard in that trailer audio I want to reference. If we could miss something as big as Elizabeth Friedman, who else have we missed? And that really stuck with me. Can you expand upon those thoughts a little bit before we dive into why we need to know who Elizabeth Friedman is?
Absolutely. I think in some ways that's the largest takeaway from the film. I think she's remarkable. Her story is extraordinary. And her contribution to keeping the nation safe in the first half of the 20th century is astounding. If we could miss her story, who else are we missing? And I think this is kind of a lesson for all of us who love history and who want to understand where we came from.
And the extreme sexism that she dealt with, it's fascinating because it's not that we almost missed her story. It's that people took her story. People, namely J. Edgar Hoover. We all know that name and associate it with the FBI and with varying degrees of intimate knowledge about that history. But my goodness, she had these remarkable accomplishments during World War II and disrupting Nazi spy rings in South America. And J. Edgar Hoover took all that glory. And this is something that Elizabeth Friedman sort of dealt with all her life.
Absolutely. I mean, there were so many moments where she had to essentially swallow her pride and keep moving forward because there were constant roadblocks put in her way because she was a woman. There's so many examples, but a good one is she, after having done amazing work and developing kind of a new style of law enforcement in the 20s and 30s, she was working for the Coast Guard during Prohibition, she was given her own unit. But with the outbreak of World War II, the Navy took over the unit and placed a man that she had trained, a younger, I'm sure very nice and very good, but not nearly with the experience that she had, they placed him in charge of the unit, essentially demoting her. And that was because women were not allowed to, you know, to govern men. They were not allowed to be in charge of men. And that was a perfect example of when really she put her patriotism, her commitment to the country above, you know, the personal slights that she was experiencing on a regular basis.
So we're talking about breaking codes, and it seems that Elizabeth's first real shot at breaking codes was given to her by this eccentric millionaire, Mr. Fabian, who came across her, whisked her away by a train, it almost seemed by force in the telling of the documentary, although she seemed to enjoy her time at this massive estate in Illinois. He had this obsession, and I guess it wasn't uncommon for some people in that period to have this belief that some of Shakespeare's plays, or maybe all of them, were written by Francis Bacon, and that there were these codes inside of it. And this wealthy man, George Fabian, wanted Elizabeth to get into these folios and discover these codes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, as you said, you're absolutely right. It was actually, it seems like such a wacky theory to us now, but it was actually a very popular theory that Shakespeare actually did not write the plays. Mark Twain believed that. Any number of luminaries believed that. And so, and George Fabian, not only being the eccentric that he was, but he loved attention and he loved fame. And he thought that if he could somehow crack this mystery and prove once and for all that Shakespeare had not written the plays, that he would kind of change the course of literature. So he puts this 23-year-old Elizabeth Friedman, kind of gives her the job of trying to unearth these codes that were supposed to exist in Shakespeare folios. That's the first printings of the Shakespeare plays. And that's how, you know, that's how she starts her code-breaking career. And that certainly not only is going to determine the trajectory of her life in terms of her work, but also in terms of the man she marries.
So she meets William Friedman, a photographer who was there. I guess he was tasked with photographing these texts to make them larger so that they could be analyzed. And he's described in the film as handsome, and his hair is always combed well, and he dresses well, and they took a liking to each other. What I was struck by is William Friedman was a Jewish man, Elizabeth Smith at the time, a Quaker. How strange was that in that period for people to be in an interfaith relationship like that?
Well, William was, he was a Russian Jewish immigrant. So he comes from a background where his family had experienced the pogroms in Russia. And, you know, she comes from a very, you know, comfortable, stable, Midwestern background. All I can say is that both families were kind of appalled at the marriage. Probably William's family more so, because they wanted him to marry a Jewish woman, and had he went ahead and they eloped before he announced it to the family. Had it been public, had they lived in the area, there certainly would have been a certain degree of shunning. So it's their marriage, their decision to marry really reflects in some ways their incredible kind of, besides the incredible bond they had with each other, which I can talk about in a minute, but it's that kind of independence and daring do and, ability to chart new grounds that just even the act of getting married reflects.
We're talking with writer, director, producer Shana Gazit. Her latest film is The Codebreaker, which is the latest installment in PBS's The American Experience anthology series. It premieres tonight at 9 o'clock on PBS stations Channel 48 and Channel 54. I did think it was interesting, as we spoke of earlier, that Elizabeth Friedman faced obvious sexism at various points in her career, despite her significant contributions to American history and success in wars and significant crime battles. But it seemed that William Friedman always had a great appreciation for her and her skills.
You know, I have great admiration for their marriage. They got together in 1916. This is 4 years before American women even had the right to vote. And what it was from the first moment, it was a marriage of equals. It was a marriage where the intellectual electricity between them was so powerful. And so that when they got into code breaking, I mean, she was an amazing code breaker. He turned out to be an amazing code breaker. But what they were able to do together in their early years was just absolutely remarkable and groundbreaking. So it was a very, it was a marriage that was, I think, filled with deep love and deep respect and a deep sense of equality.
There are three significant American historic, international historic events, really, that the Friedmans played a serious role in. We're talking about World War I, we're talking about the criminal enterprises that emerged in the Prohibition era, and then we're talking about World War II. Shortly after they were married, World War I broke out. The Friedmans were still associated with George Fabian, who saw an opportunity to create a code-breaking agency. And months into the war, the government established one. And so William Friedman got to go to work for it, but it seemed they didn't want Elizabeth to be a part of it. And ultimately, when she was able to be, it was like at half the salary.
Well, when they set up the code, when George Fabian set up the code breaking unit at Riverbank, his estate, there was really nothing like it throughout the country. The United States just had not really cared very much about code breaking. The Europeans were much more interested in it. So that when Fabian sets up this unit, we have to give him credit for a vision that he had. And he places Elizabeth and William in charge of this unit. And really, what had they done? They had, you know, been looking through these Shakespeare folios, and now they're going to be, breaking codes or decoding messages for across the military, the Army, the Navy, the State Department. And so 6 months into it, finally, the military realizes, hey, this is important stuff. We better create a unit in D.C., which they do. So the work diminishes at Riverbank. And William then signs up as a young patriotic man to joins the military as a field code breaker during the war. Elizabeth really wants to join him. One, she's incredibly skilled at this point. I mean, she's as skilled as William, if not more so. And two, joining the military was really going to launch careers. It certainly was going to launch William's career. And of course, she wanted it for herself as well. But she couldn't go because women were not allowed to serve on the front. And it was really one of these moments. She had a few moments in her career where it was, this is over. My glory days are over. I'm going to, you know, watch William move forward and you know, become a wife.
And it's interesting that not many years after World War I, it was another arm of the military, the Coast Guard, that reached out to Elizabeth, because this is during Prohibition, so alcohol is banned in the country, and bootleggers had turned to using the seas to deliver liquor up and down the coast. And they thought, that the investigators believe that there were codes being used to support this effort on shortwave radios. And so Elizabeth Friedman is called upon. And just to show not only how brilliant she is, but how brave she is, I mean, she went up against some of the best known names from mob history. As I'm watching this film, I'm thinking she was strong enough to stand up against Al Capone.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember is that about this period is that the crime syndicates that rose up, gangsters and mobsters, were, I mean, there was so much money to be made, and they created such elaborate kind of organizational structures. You know, somebody in the film compared it to Walmart. You know, where they would have these, you know, enormous ships at sea that in international waters that would, you know, carry the alcohol, and then smaller ships would come and take it. Anyway, all of this is being coordinated by the use of codes and shortwave radio. So when she comes in and starts being able to decode this messages, she's really developing a very new approach to law enforcement, because what she's doing is not only just getting data by decoding these messages, she really begins to create a global map of kind of the operational structure of these crime syndicates. And that gives the U.S. government an ability to begin to go after them, including taking some of the biggest names to court, which is the likes of Al Capone's brother and people in Al Capone's organization. And this was dangerous. Agents had been killed, you know, there was a hit put on her, and she was now going to become the public face of going after the, you know, the biggest gangsters in the country.
And the Capone attorneys, I understand, in some of these cases, or at least one of them, put pressure on her while she was on the stand, suggesting that she's just making guesses with these codes. It's witchcraft, I believe someone in the film described it as. And she ultimately, Elizabeth Friedman did, asked to be able to explain this and had a chalkboard brought into the courtroom and displayed her knowledge. And that pretty much shut down the defense.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a battery of lawyers, and they were going after her, to prove that there was no such thing as the signs of code breaking, and that it was this witchcraft, voodoo, silly. And on top of which, she was a woman, who was saying this. So when the judge agrees to let a black boy come into the courtroom, and she begins to give what the newspapers called a lesson in cryptology, I mean, literally people in the courtroom gasp. You know, it was so powerful, it was so succinct, it was so clear. It left the Capone lawyers speechless. And, you know, guilty verdicts came across the board from that. So it was really quite a powerful and theatrical moment, even though Elizabeth was being Elizabeth. I mean, she was no nonsense. She was confident, and she certainly knew her craft.
And we are talking about The Codebreaker, the latest installment of the PBS anthology series American Experience. We're joined by writer, director, producer Shana Gazit. I don't want to give everything away in this film for people who are not intimately familiar with this remarkable woman, but I think we at least have to touch on World War II. I mean, when we think of World War II, we think of the war in Europe, we think of the war in the Pacific. But my goodness, I have to confess, I didn't know how much was going on in South America involving Nazi spy rings. And Elizabeth Friedman was turned to once again by her country. And just give us a little bit of an overview of this vast network of people and her work in helping to squash that.
Well, first of all, I had the exact same experience. I mean, the South American threat was completely kind of new to me. Which is quite extraordinary, since it the threat in South America, the threat that the Nazis would really infiltrate South American governments, that would bring South American governments into the Nazi fold, meant that in the highest level of the American government, Franklin Roosevelt really feared that there all of a sudden would be a third front in the war. So it was really important that the work that Elizabeth was doing, because she was, it turns out that there was this very extensive, very sophisticated Nazi spy ring in South America. And when she starts being able to decode their messages, it was extraordinary, because she finds out that they are sending information to the German high command about the locations of Allied shipping in the Atlantic. And especially in the early years of the war, the German U-boats, the submarines, they were called Wolf Packs, were just destroying Allied shipping, which was providing a critical lifeline of supplies and troops to Europe, and especially to England. So that once she starts being able to decode the messages and understand now the coordinates of the submarines, she's able to provide information that the Allied ships can use to take, to get themselves out of harm's way. So it's she's providing very, very critical information, and really begins to tip the balance in what they call the Battle of the Atlantic. At the same time, after she manages to break the Enigma, which was really a code-making machine that was thought to be unbreakable, and she does it with pencil and paper, she begins to understand how much this Nazi spy ring is really fueling coups in South America, is really fueling this kind of, shift towards of South American governments towards the Nazis. And so that also allows the Allies to get ahead of the potential danger.
And as I referenced at the top of this interview, J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, they got involved. And while they got some glorified headlines because of this operation that was thwarted by those efforts, it did cut off the information pipeline that Elizabeth Friedman was using. And then ultimately, Hoover ends up being a hero in this story, and much of America forgets about Elizabeth. You really need to watch the film to understand fully. Of course, I could have Shana tell us more about it, but it's so worth taking the time this evening to watch this really remarkable woman's story. We've been talking with Shana Gazit, the writer, director, producer of The Codebreaker. It's the latest installment of the PBS anthology series American Experience. It premieres tonight, Monday, on PBS stations at 9 o'clock. Shauna, thank you so much for the time you gave us for the film and for letting me watch it before everybody else got to watch it. Thank you so much.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.